What's up, everybody, and welcome to Remember the Loot, episode 42, a very special episode. And this time, instead of having some funky catchphrase, something to make the T-Bird laugh, we just want to get serious. We want to give a shout out to one of our podcast panelists, Nick. Our thoughts and our prayers go with him, his friends and family. A very close friend of theirs committed suicide this past weekend. We just want to reach out to them, you know what I'm saying? Reach out to all of our listeners, a lot of you guys that that write into us and communicate with us on a regular basis. You guys are all part of that inner circle of friends, and this has affected you, so we just want to reach out. We want to take a moment to let you guys know that we are thinking about you, we are praying for you, and all those things. And if there's anything that Remember the Loot can do, feel free to write in at rememberloot@provengamer.com if you just want to talk, if you want to reach out. A few weeks ago, we did have a serious moment in the midst of all of our foolishness, and we did mention the topic of suicide, and we do want to double down on that and just reach out to everyone and let you guys know that if you are contemplating such a thing, you know, feel like you don't have anyone to talk to, feel free to email us, message us on Twitter, Facebook, whatever the case, because we love interacting with our fans, our friends, anyone who pays any amount of attention to us. And we love letting people know that you are actually important, that you are valuable, and you are worth more than whatever you're going through. Right, T-Bird?
Yep.
So with us this week in episode 42 is we have the infamous Douglas from Limited Run Games. Douglas, if you want to say what's up.
Hey, what's up?
Now, I saw on your Twitter, you said, I think your bio says, you can call me Dougie, but you can't call me Doug or something like that?
Yeah, I was named after my dad. It's just one of those things when you're growing up, you're like, don't call me the same name my dad goes by. But honestly, so many people abbreviate it now, I just kind of gave up. But it's just, I don't feel like editing my Twitter.
Well, I am a junior, okay? So my dad is named Daryl, my name is Daryl, and I can't stand to be called Junior. So I feel you. We're on the same page in that fashion. So this week's episode is a special episode. Douglas, you work for Limited Run Games. You're what, the co-owner, co-founder?
Yeah, I'm the co-founder and I guess co-CEO or whatever.
All right, there you go. So you guys have been making a lot of noise on the internets. And I have found you guys by accident. We'll get into that in a little bit. But you guys, from what I can tell, you've been pretty successful. You got a lot going on. And so we are super stoked to have you on our show to talk about that. But first, we have to start every show off with a toast. Now, what we're doing for all of you guys that are listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and our very favorite podcast app, Podbean. That's right, Podbean. You've been on that Podbean lately, haven't you?
No, but I just use iTunes. It's easier.
We know that our man, old Tricky Mick, he loves that Podbean. So if you're listening in and you have no clue, what is this clicking noise? What is this tapping noise that you hear? It is the T-Bird and myself, Resident Daryl, about to break into our Monster Ultra Zero amazing energy drinks. Now, Doug, since it's your first time on Remember Loot, what we do before every episode to really get into things is we crack open our ice cold cans of Monster energy drinks. We take a big swig and we give a shout out. That went down the wrong hole. We give a shout out to somebody, and this week is a shout out to Limited Run Games and all your success and all the things you guys have been doing, and we want to cheer you guys on and hope that you are, you know, say, continue to grow and are more successful. So here's to Limited Run Games and Monster for making such great drinks.
I really appreciate that, and you know, congratulations on getting a sponsorship from Monster.
We're working on it. Labels out. I don't know if you ever watch any of our YouTube videos, but we always make sure we have that Monster label out just in case they're like, you know, what are these RTL guys doing? What are these Remember Loot guys doing? So, being that we have the you as a guest, Doug, if you want to go ahead and just tell everybody what you've been playing this past week.
Well, since today, I mean, it's the week of No Man's Sky, so I mean, just like everybody else, I've been playing that, but I've also been trying to finish Odin Sphere, just because, like, I didn't really get to play that much on PS2, so trying to finish that on PS4, but obviously I'm playing No Man's Sky, and it's pretty good. I mean, I didn't have the hype that everybody else had for it, so it's exactly what I expected. So, just playing that right now.
Okay, so when you say it's exactly what you expected, fill us in a little bit. What were you expecting? What did you assume No Man's Sky was going to be?
Kind of just like a exploration resource gathering game. with a lot of sci-fi stuff. I mean, I kind of felt like it was going to be like that. I didn't expect any like crazy first-person shooter or space battles going on. I didn't think it was going to be the end-all, be-all game. I knew like probably within maybe even a week or two, I'd probably already move on to something else. It wasn't going to be the last game I ever played.
Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. Well, there's a lot of people out there who seem to think that this is the second coming of Minecraft.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
So we'll see. I actually am a late bloomer. I just got into Minecraft. I've got two young kids. One is 6 and one is 4. And these fools are just nasty with some Minecraft. And I never understood it. I didn't like the way it looked. And it never spoke to me, never appealed to me. But my son sat me down not too long ago and was like, "Daddy, I would love to get all of the trophies on Minecraft." And I said, "Son, you truly are something special. Daddy loves you." So I was like, "I'll go ahead and I'll just sit down with him and I'll work this out." Not enjoying the game or not understanding the game. And it took a little while. But once I got hooked, now here I am constantly playing Minecraft on my Vita. So although I'm not diving into No Man's Sky just yet, I think that if it's anything like Minecraft, it might get a hold of me as well. So what about you, T-Bird? What you been playing?
I've been playing a little bit more Pokemon Y. Just trying to finish this Pokedex up for like the first time ever. And I got back into playing a little bit more of Far Cry Primal. The game still blows my mind how pretty it looks.
Lots of hair, lots of fire.
Lots of hair, lots of fire, lots of crocodiles.
Oh, now what I'm going to do is stick my thumb up his butthole. Have you done that yet?
Yes.
Have you cornholed a crocodile?
Yep.
Oh, snap. Episode 42, cornhole and crocodiles. Look at that. See, it just comes natural. I don't even have to think about it. They just roll right out. So,
just like the stone up his...
for the record, Doug, you have to excuse us. We are 30 years old and extremely immature.
He's 30 years old. I'm 24.
Excuse me. Dick and fart jokes are still funny to us.
No, you're good. I'm only... how old am I? 28, so...
There you go. You got two more years where it's okay. Once you get my age, the wonderful world of 30, 31, people start looking down on you for laughing at the same jokes that you laughed at when you were 13. So, what else, T-Bird? What you got going on right there right now in your 3DS?
He's playing Pokemon.
Oh, Pokemon. Now, are you playing the Pokemon Go?
No.
No?
Because I have to go outside, and I already work out in the heat enough. I don't want to go spend time out there trying to catch imaginary Pokemon. I can sit in the comfort of my cold AC and do the same thing.
What about you, Doug? You playing the Pokemon Go?
I was. Like a lot of the guys from the office and even my wife, we go on walks and play it. But ever since they said that they kind of basically made it harder to catch Pokemon and then claimed it was a bug. Yeah. And then like they still haven't quite fixed it, even though it's obviously not a bug and just an attempt to make people buy more Pokeballs. It actually just made the game a lot less fun. And, like, I was already kind of spending money on the game. Now I don't even feel like I should spend money.
Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. Now, again, this is another one of those fads that has never grabbed me. Pokemon kind of became popular. I discovered girls, and then Pokemon came out. So it was like, okay, well, this kind of passed me as a teenager, you know what I'm saying, young man.
Wait.
And then, what was that face for? Say
are
what?
You exactly 30?
No, I'm 31.
Oh, okay. Well, I could kind of see that. I was going to say, you're about the age range, though, where it may have grabbed you.
I just missed it. You know, it was one of those things to where, I don't know. There's a handful of things, oddly enough. Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, that whole wave came in to the generation just, or at least in, you know what I'm saying, when I was coming up in our area. That kind of caught the generation past us, and we were already into... more mature stuff, and I don't mean that as like a level of maturity. I mean like literally graphical content. Like, I think by the time I first heard about Pokemon, I was playing Grand Theft Auto 3 to give a, you know what I'm saying, time frame as far as I can remember. So I just kind of missed that whole fad, and it never, you know, I was never a big Nintendo handheld guy. I've never actually played a Pokemon RPG. I've sat there and watched people play them. It never grabbed me. So now that the Pokemon Go is a thing, you know what I'm saying, I ask everyone, are you playing? And, you know, what are your thoughts? Because what I constantly hear are these complaints about how broken this game is and how, like, you know what I'm saying, janky it is. But yet, it's got a lot of people playing.
Yeah, so, a lot of people stop, though.
Yeah.
Like, when we go on walks, it used to be, like, crowded at our local town hall, and now there's not that many people, and a lot of cops have told people, like, they can't be at parks after night.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely dying down, but it's still really popular.
We had a guy in our shop. We build weightlifting equipment, competition weightlifting equipment during the day, and we podcast and play video games at night. Kind of like, it's like our superpower.
That's a terrible superpower.
You ever seen the movie Blank Man?
No.
It's got like Marlon Wayans in it or whatever. One of the Wayans brothers. And it's the same Wayans guy that was Major Payne.
Oh, yeah.
And he makes his own little superhero outfit. And it is ridiculous. It's an old 90s comedy. It is freaking hilarious. But yeah, we're the blank men of superheroes. So if you're listening and you have no clue who Blank Man is, look it up. You will not be disappointed.
You might be.
Anyway, so we work in a fab shop. We build competition weightlifting equipment. We run big machines, deal with steel, all that good stuff. And it was hilarious to see the great divide in our shop. And it was an age group divide for the most part. Every now and again, we had some of them cross over. But you have a lot of these older guys. You know what I'm saying? We go on break, and everybody's just sitting around eating some food, talking crap. And then you have a lot of the younger guys that work with us who are out in the yard, you know what I'm saying, the scrap yard, walking around looking for Pokemon. And so to sit back and watch men scream across the yard and making fun of the other guys for playing Pokemon was very, very enjoyable. And then one of the guys in our shop who Josh? He was a pretty high level because he'd been playing for a while, going to the Riverwalk, Capitol. I don't know. He was a very high level. He was in the high teens, maybe early 20s. I mean, it seemed like he was, you know, pretty serious about it. And then I guess when they did their last little update, it kicked him out of the app and wiped all of his progress. So that was a very, very sad young man. We're riding to the gas station to grab a soda, and he's like, yeah, I quit. I'm deleting this. I'll never do that again. And so
that sucks.
So, well, as for me, I have been playing Breach and Clear Deadline. As a matter of fact, last week on episode 41, we gave our first impressions of the game. We played it for the entirety of our podcast.
Spoiler, we were really bad at it.
Spoiler, I'm still bad at it. I've got like 10 hours in the game and I'm still terrible at it. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's one of those games that I really, really enjoy, but I'm not getting any better at. And it's like, I know that if I stay in command mode, I will progress faster because they are far more accurate in command mode than they are in third person. But I have this raging desire to just run around in the third person mode and try my best. And a game that I should have probably beaten already, I am just like, you know, I don't know. I'm just running around and just grinding. I've put on some podcasts and just sat there and went from little area to area. Let the horde come after me, and I just run around in circles and kill them, and I'm collecting my scrap. My intention is to platinum this game. I like it enough to go for the platinum, and it seems like to my knowledge, I played it last night for a little bit. As far as I know, no one's platinumed it yet, so it seems like the 50,000 scrap trophy is going to be
it's going to be a while.
It's going to be a tough one. So,
Something neat about Deadline, though. You guys are talking about Far Cry Primal. Jason Graves did the soundtrack for both of those games.
I gotta say, the soundtrack, I'm doing the review for it, so I don't want to give away too much stuff, but that's something that's going to be in my reviews. I really like the soundtrack. It reminds me, okay, so growing up, here we go, we're going on a ride, buckle up. So when I was a kid, my father owned a video store, back when that was like a legit thing that you could do, before Blockbuster beat everybody up, and then, you know what I'm saying, then Blockbuster went out. So we had a video store, and one of our favorite things to do when I was a kid was we would get all of these like B-movie, you know what I'm saying, horror movies, and we would sit down and watch them. And zombie movies were always mine and my dad's favorite thing to watch. I've been watching zombie movies at a crazy young age. Like, I will never let my 6-year-old and my 4-year-old, I'll never let them watch some of the movies I saw just their age and just a few years older than them. But the Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead were two of my all-time favorite movies. I really like the 1990s remake of the Dawn of the Living Dead, or excuse me, Night of the Living Dead. I just crossed them both up. The color version, But I enjoyed the old 70s black and white one as well. But we would sit there and watch those things together over and over and over, me and my dad, back on VHS. And we were, you know, what would you do, boy, if it was ever a zombie apocalypse? And we would always just kind of like make up these wild scenarios. And the soundtrack for Deadline reminds me so much of the soundtrack from those old movies. Now, I haven't gone back and rewatched them to compare, but you talking about like a nostalgia shock, like just I booted the game up, went to the main menu, and immediately I was like, oh man, I want to watch Night of the Living Dead. Oh man, I want to watch Dawn of the Dead. So
yeah, I had a similar experience when he was making the soundtrack, because like I grew up with my dad watching like movies like The Thing and a lot of John Carpenter movies, and that's kind of like Deadline soundtrack sounds very familiar to that.
There you go. Yeah, we watched a lot of John Carpenter movies too. John Carpenter, Wes Craven, I mean, those are some of my dad's favorites. You know, it's, you know, guys in the horror industry, man. And so anytime they had something come out, or anytime somebody even in the, you know what I'm saying, affiliated with them would pop out an old, especially a B horror movie. I don't know what it was. Me and my dad always loved the janky B movies. So, but anyways, so I've been playing Breach and Clear, Deadline. I started the Telltale's Batman, and as a Telltale fan, I am loving it. Yeah, I like, I don't want to say everything they do, but I really like the, since The Walking Dead up, I really enjoyed about every game. Game of Thrones was the only one that I didn't really enjoy. And then, so far this Telltale Batman, it's got the new engine. It's got the updated graphics. It's got, I don't know, it looks good. It sounds, and it feels good. It sounds good. It's still got that Telltale charm where it's just a little janky. It's just a little, I don't want to say frame pops, but like, you know what I'm saying? The characters kind of stagger for a second when they go to switch scenes. But anyways, that's pretty good. And then I've also been playing a little bit of Batman Arkham Knight. I'm late to the party on that one. Something you probably don't know about me, Doug, but I have a tremendous backlog. I love to buy games. I love to get games, and I love to play them, but I have very, very little time. So I accumulate games on games on games. And then by the time I get into something, it's usually a year or so past its prime. So,
no, I completely understand, especially with like limited run games getting so busy. I probably buy like, I don't know how many games a month, but they all stay sealed because I get so far behind in my game.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, I was going to say on that Arkham Knight though, that Batmobile is rough. Like, it's fun driving it, but those battles, like, I feel like they kind of just throw them at you for no reason just to make the game seem longer. That was my only beef with that game.
Well, so far, I'm not too far into it. So far, it hasn't overstayed its welcome. I have really enjoyed the mechanic that they throw in there that I love the most is you're driving, you're going, and then you hold down L trigger and it turns into the tank, you know, and you can strafe left and right. Like, I think that is really, really neat. I'm not a huge fan of the vehicle parkour that you're having to do. But, you know, so far my experience with it, I've maybe have an hour and a half in the game. But so far, you know what I'm saying, it's pretty rad. The combat is a lot smoother. I beat Arkham Asylum, and I really enjoyed it. But my biggest gripe was, for as much combat as you're stuck doing in that game, it really seemed like Assassin's Creed 1, you know? It's like, okay, I'm just going to wait for you to hit me, and then I'll, you know what I'm saying, chain my stuff together.
I was just going to say, I felt the same way. It seems like a lot of games now just kind of use the Assassin's Creed Batman formula for fighting.
And it's not terrible, you know, and I'm somebody, I like to think of myself as somebody who can find the good in any game. And there's not a ton that I will complain about. But that was one of those things where by the end of Arkham Asylum, I was like, okay, that was fun, but I don't want to do that again. And then when Arkham City came out, I started it up. I probably played an hour or two, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I still was kind of tired from the last one. But this one, you know, and I started Origins on one of our shows one night, just because I've had it forever. And for several podcasts, I would just like, okay, I'm going to start a game that I've never played before. And if it, you know what I'm saying, if it grabs me during the show, I'll finish the game. So I started Arkham Origins, And again, I was like, you know what? I'm just not digging this combat. I don't know that that's what I want. So Arkham Knight has sat on my shelf for quite a while. And then a few nights ago, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to dig into the newest one. Maybe it's better. And sure enough, it's a lot smoother. It's a lot better. It's a lot faster. It feels more responsive, too. So
yeah, I really enjoyed all the games. Like, I don't mind the combat so much, but I'm also apparently in the minority. I thought Arkham City was the best one. Everybody else at the Mighty Rabbit Limited Run Games office liked Asylum more, but I don't know. And Origins, for me, it was kind of rough because I got it when it came out, and it was just broken. Like, you could tell, like, they didn't test the game very much. Like, yeah. It actually crashed my Xbox a few times, and I was just like, I beat it barely, but it's one of those games I should have waited, like, until all the patches were done.
Well, I did, and I haven't had, again, I only played it one night, you know, during our show, so about two and a half hours. And I didn't have any real, you know, huge issues with it other than I just wasn't in the mood for that style of combat. So, other than that, I love the way they look. I love the feel. I love the Arkham, just the entire universe they have going on there. So I'm a very big Batman fan. And the older I get, the more I really, really enjoy Batman. Batman's like a fine wine. The older it gets, the more I enjoy it. So, well, since you brought up Mighty Rabbit and Limited Run, let's go ahead and dive into topic number one. So, for all of the listeners who have never heard of Limited Run Games, give us the elevator, you know what I'm saying, sales pitch. What is Limited Run Games?
Limited Run Games is a publishing and distributing offshoot of Mighty Rabbit Studios. We're all part of the same company, but Limited Run Games is basically, its goal is to bring previously digital-only games into physical form, and or games that may never have seen the light of, like, physical without our help. So we go out of our way to, like, contact devs and try to see if we can help them get a physical out by offering to pay for the run up front, so we take care of the cost, and we also take care of a lot of the work that goes into it.
Okay. That's cool. So what all goes in, I mean, and I'm sure there's some things you can't tell us, you know what I'm saying, but what all goes into, like, you know, publishing a game physically? Like, we know that, like, digital is kind of the all too imminent future, and I've seen the little note at the end of on y'all's website, you know what I'm saying? Like, you guys are trying to, you know what I'm saying, fight against that imminent future or whatever. I personally am a physical, I want my physical copy. So yeah, digital is convenient, you know what I'm saying, to an extent, but I always feel like there's going to be that day where I turn it on and it's just not going to work, you know? There's going to be that day where they're like, okay, well, this is locked down.
Like Xbox is already.
Oh my gosh, I've had so many problems with that. So what all entails into getting an actual physical copy of a game made?
Probably one of the biggest obstacles for a lot of devs, and including ourselves when we first started, was how much money it costs. It's a pretty big chunk of change to spend at first. And then the other problem is getting through of all of Sony's, like, FQA certification. There's just a lot of different systems you have to learn, and they have a lot of requirements, because it's not like PC, or not just there's an actual gatekeeper this time. You have to deal with, like, what Sony wants. You have to contact them. You have to, like, agree on a run size. They have, like, certain, like, you have to print a certain amount. And then that was probably one of the toughest things, I'd say, is FQA, because even if your game's already approved digitally and it's been on sale, if you didn't set it up in a certain format, you have to resubmit it. Basically, you have to go through the entire process of, like, being a brand new game again. So, like, they might all of a sudden find bugs they should have found the first time, and, like, these could be bugs that you have no idea how to, like, repro, or they could be things that, like, if you're working with a developer and on a legacy game for them, like, they may not want to revisit that and, like, pay someone to try to fix this bug. So that's probably one of the biggest obstacles.
Gotcha. So how long have you guys been doing Limited Run Games?
So the idea, and I guess, like, the start of the project was May of last year. I had previously been working at Ubisoft as, like, a technical support, as well as working at Mighty Rabbit for with Josh for doing, like testing and community management, as well as technical support on that side. And He's the president of Mighty Rabbit Studios, and like obviously we make games. So yeah, like I got laid off at Ubisoft along with like a giant chunk of people, and there wasn't that much more money left for testing, and he was just, and I was already looking for like other jobs, and he was like, well, you know, I want to start this thing. Like Mighty Rabbit at the time was kind of struggling financially, and he was like, this might be our saving grace. Like maybe we had seen Brian Provinciano from V-Blank put out Retro City Rampage on his own, and we were like, hey, that's pretty cool. I didn't know like you could do that. Like we were kind of shocked and amazed that like as a small indie game company you could actually do that yourself. And so Josh contacted our account manager and we figured out how to do it, and basically from May to October when Breach and Clear launched was just us trying to figure out how Sony worked and setting up like the structure for how our business would work.
Gotcha. That's really awesome. So Mighty Rabbit. Now I'm gonna back up a second. So I was actually looking for a physical copy, a physical release of Resident Evil Revelations 2. So I'm on Twitter, I'm on Amazon, eBay, all this stuff. And this is obviously before the game released, and I was just kind of typing in all kinds of hashtags. I'm like, how do I find out like who does this stuff? You know, like how can I find like who does like an actual like physical copy of the game? And I want to say somewhere down the line I found a hashtag, and I came across Limited Run Games, and I started clicking around, and I saw, God, what was the first game that I saw you guys? I want to say maybe it was Oddworld.
That might be. That was our biggest first. That was our first third-party game, and it was pretty big for our first one.
Maybe that's where I found. I think I want to say Oddworld because like
that was in about March.
Okay, that sounds about right. It's been, I've only known about you guys for a few months. And so, anyways, I found it. I was like, I'll follow this, you know what I'm saying, whatever. And I'm just kind of, you know, just kind of watched and kind of seen what you guys have been doing. So how do you guys decide what games that you go after? Is it just kind of like random? You know, like you said before, you're contacting developers, you're calling people, or is it like, hey, I've got this one in mind, and then you go for it?
So when we started the company, we like created a Google Doc of like dream games we'd love to see physical, and some of those were like insane things like Yakuza 5, and then like Axiom Verge was on there, and there's some other games too that maybe some of those aren't as far out as like doing a game with Sega, but that's like that was kind of how we started. We picked out games that we wanted. Like these are games that I wanted to preserve, and same with Josh, and we both wanted to own them on our shelf. So that's how we did it. And we went out contacting developers, but as we've gotten bigger, developers have actually reached out to us. And for the most part, we haven't really been saying no to developers. I mean, it's been games that like we'll research, and sometimes like even if we're not like necessarily 100% into the game, the story behind how the game was developed is kind of also like attributed to like the fact that we might sign them or not, because like there's a, for example, a game company we're signing right now that I can't announce who they are yet, but it's just a husband and wife, and like they worked really hard on this game. It's a really good looking game. It just unfortunately they didn't have any marketing skill, so the game kind of went unnoticed on the PlayStation Store, but like the game is solid. You could tell they put a lot of love into it, and just we're kind of like the underdogs in the industry. Like we're trying to fight a digital future. Like we're obviously, the industry wants to go the other way for some reason, so we feel a relationship with other underdogs, and we want to help them. Like maybe we can keep their story going. Like maybe they made this game and for a while they've been thinking like, oh, we're not going to be able to make games anymore, but if we can help them become successful and sell some games and make them some money again, then they can go on making another game, and they'll learn from everything that they've done that may or may not have been a mistake for them. So that's kind of how we do it. And then again, like I said, we have a lot of our account manager is really cool too. Like we have a cool account manager, his name's Shane at Sony, and he's a real big fan of what we're doing. So he actually introduces us to a lot of like other people that he manages, and that's really helped out a lot. And then especially with so we have Shadow Complex coming out soon.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, we originally asked Epic like a long time ago, like, hey, we'd love to do Shadow Complex, and they kind of just said, no, we're not interested. And then once we put out Oddworld, they were like, oh, you guys did Oddworld. Like, let's see if we can do this. Like, and Oddworld inhabitants really enjoyed the experience from what we can tell, and they've been telling people about it. And that's really helped too. So word of mouth has helped us. Like, another dream game of ours was Octodad, and I kind of emailed them not expecting to get an answer that was positive. And like the next thing I knew, we had just announced that we were going to do Volume with Mike Bethel, and they were like, "Hey, we're really big fans of Volume, and I think it's really awesome what you guys are doing. We'd love to do Octodad." And I was just like, "What? Are you, really? That was easy. Like, I didn't have to fight for that." So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, like I said, I've been watching you guys for a little bit now, and when I saw the announcement of Shadow Complex, I was like, "Oh man, that's a really good one." So,
oh yeah,
so that one will definitely do well for you guys.
Yeah, I hope so.
So, what's the relationship between Mighty Rabbit and Limited Run? You said it's like Limited Run's kind of an offshoot of Mighty Rabbit. Is it kind of all under the same umbrella?
As of right now,
guys do both.
Yeah, as of right now, it's still under the same umbrella. Mighty Rabbit is chiefly our development side. So, like, we have guys on that team, and that's where I'm originally from, that basically just do, like, they program games. We do, like, contract work. Like, originally Breach and Clear was a contract, so it was Deadline. And then, like, Saturday Morning RPG is an original game by us, and then we have some other ones we're working on. So that's what that side does. And then, like, the Limited Run side is just me and Josh. So we handle, like, all the shipping. We handle, like, the logistics, community stuff, customer service, talking to devs. We have another guy recently, Ben, just because Josh has been really busy. Ben's, like, kind of our producer on Mighty Rabbit. But he also helps on Limited Run when he can. So just wanted to give him some credit since he says I never do. But yeah, he's kind of been like a big help, like kind of easing some of the burden. Because for two guys, it did get kind of overwhelming for a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I know you said earlier that Oddworld was your fastest or best selling game. What is your favorite game that you guys have done? Like, what's the one that you've done so far that you would have to say was like, your favorite of the mix?
Well, I wouldn't say Oddworld was our fastest. It actually took a while to sell out. It was just, it was one of the biggest titles. It's the biggest title we've done.
Gotcha.
The fastest game for us was probably the recent one, Soldner, like when you and I were trying to originally talk.
Yeah.
We thought something was wrong with our store because Soldner sold out in like a minute. So we were like, what the heck happened? We thought maybe we were being hacked. We thought somebody like found a way to like manipulate our store to cheat so that we were really busy researching, and it turned out from our last run, which was Lost Sea and Zeo Drifter, before that, we had 6,000 unique visitors to our store, which necessarily aren't buyers, but that's still a lot. Like, that's visitors.
Yeah.
So we went from 6,000 on Zeo Drifter, and then we went to Soldner and Deadline. We had 12,000 people. So we doubled, like, out of nowhere. So that was the reason it sold out so fast. Like, I don't know if there was, like, a website that was broadcasting this. We think it may have been, we figured out a way to do our mailing list correctly. We think maybe that's what it was, but I don't know. Other people are telling us we should have known that a shmup would have sold, and we're like, how would we have known that? Like, the East Asia Soft told us digitally, Soldner actually didn't even do that well, so they were kind of shocked it sold out, too. Obviously happy, but they didn't expect that to happen, so that Soldner was definitely our fastest one, and I guess in terms of favorite game of mine, I guess mine hasn't come out yet, so... one of my favorites that we did announce was Nuclear Throne, so that was kind of a big deal for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, we got a couple guys who are big fans of y'all's, big fans. And so we talk back and forth. We got a handful of our guys in our community, and one of them, he is... Shout out Stink Palm. This dude, he was irate that everything sold out so fast. And so he's like, hey, I know you guys are talking to him pretty soon. Can you figure this out? Can you talk to him for me? It was just like, he was kind of reaching out like, hey, can you see if they can get more copies of it? Cause he hawks your store. You know, he's a huge Vita collector. I mean, the dude's got a great collection and it's continuously growing. But he was like, man, I get so pissed whenever I have to go on eBay and buy this thing for 2 and 3 times as much as it came out for just so I can have the physical copy. And so whenever I had, saw that you had posted, you thought the story might have got hacked. That's when I sent you that message. I was like, hey, sounds like you got your hands full. You know what I'm saying? Y'all handle your business. No harm, no foul. You know what I'm saying? And all the while, we got a couple guys who are writing into us. They're like, hey, you already let us know you were talking to them. What's the deal here? What's going on? You know? So I don't know what it looks like on your end, but from on our end, from some of these like crazy hardcore collectors that we're friends with. Seems like you guys got some legit fans, man. And it seems like your stuff is growing, that's super exciting. You know what I'm saying? Especially for somebody like me who enjoys having physical copies of games.
Yeah, so, no, I was gonna say we have a really good relationship with our fans for the most part. I mean, with every game company, it seems you always get the crazy ones, but so far I haven't actually received any death threats or been swatted, which is kind of like, as long as that doesn't happen, I'll be okay and I'll keep going. I would say our fans are very vocal. Like, we try like new experiments and they always let us know, like, hey, that didn't work out, or like, you should try this. A lot of the games we try signing to are games that our fans will tell us about that we didn't even think about. So that's the thing. I have to say, like, I really enjoy the relationship with our fans. I think another good thing about us, too, is how transparent we are and how much, like, we communicate with our fans. So that's something really important that Josh and I decided when we started the company. We were like, hey, let's set up some forums. Let's get a Twitter going. Let's try to answer as many people as we can, no matter what, and make sure people know that there's actual faces behind this company. We're not out here just to, like, steal their money, because in reality, Josh and I actually don't get paid that much. Like, a lot of the money goes straight to the devs, and it goes straight to the next run. So, I mean, obviously we want to find a way to get paid more, but at the same time, like, we're doing this because we love video games and we want to preserve these games. We don't like digital. Like, I want these games to be around forever. Like, I want to go back and play these. And if they're digital, I can't do that. So, I mean, if it means I have to take a cut on pay to, like, keep this going, that's fine. Like, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. Like, I'm trying to fight the digital age. Like, I'll do what I need to. So, I just hope, like, our fans realize that we're like, legit gamers and legit collectors. Like, we are our customers. Like, I can't tell you how many times I buy stuff and my wife has to call out the fact that, like, I'm basically being targeted by my own audience. Like I'll be like, oh, this thing's limited and there's only so many of these, like, I gotta get it. And she's like, wow, like, are you selling this to yourself right now? And I'm like, yeah, apparently. So,
well, you're doing God's work and we appreciate it. Fighting the my sister, she I was ranting about digital games and stuff not working correctly, and God forbid the internet go out. You know, so here in the South, we don't have the greatest internet. And my sister, who's a big proponent of physical as well, she's like, you can't trust the cloud. So Skynet is pressing down on us. So topic number two, since you're talking about the fans and you're talking about, you know what I'm saying, the people and transparency and having open conversation with them. Topic number two comes, our questions from the community. So if you're listening to this and you want to write in, you want to ask some questions, you want us to, you know, have a limited run back on, you guys can write in at rememberloot@provinggamer.com. You can hit us up in our Facebook group. I see, got it. Facebook group. Remember the Loot. Or you can hit us up on Twitter @rememberloot. So the first question from the community is, why do limited run games only make Sony games?
Because Sony's the best. No, I'm just playing it.
He's being the trolls.
Basically, the way it worked is when we were asking about stuff, like, Breach and Clear was originally, it was on Vita, and Saturn RPG was already being worked on to come out on PS4. We actually hadn't got that far with Xbox because Microsoft's a little bit trickier, but Sony was really open to the idea and a lot more willing to do smaller print sizes, whereas Microsoft and Nintendo wanted much higher ones, and we've always been kind of, like, hitting a brick wall, it feels like, trying to get anybody to, like, see that, hey, obviously this is working out for Sony, you should want to, like, do this too. Like, to us, Shadow Complex is kind of a slap in the face to Microsoft, because here we are putting out what used to be an Xbox Live Arcade exclusive.
Yep.
The first physical version is now on PlayStation 4. So
that is awesome.
That's the reason why we're working with Sony. We want to work with Microsoft and Nintendo. We are in the process of hopefully getting somewhere with Microsoft. Nintendo is still kind of like they just don't even really care at the moment. I don't know what it is. I think we're just getting the wrong people. Because we just got lucky with our account manager at Sony. He was like a huge person. He was big into physical games. He used to work for like EGM, and he's just a big like collector. So I think we just got lucky too.
That's awesome. All right. Well, then what? This is obviously coming from the community. I know you already kind of alluded to it, but what PS4 or Vita games do you personally want to come to limited run? And we're going to answer this one as well.
So this one's kind of a weird one. Like, if I could have any PS4 game, period, and, like, it didn't even make sense for my company to do it, it would be Phantasy Star Online 2. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever, just because, like, I wouldn't do a limited run of that, but I like that game, just anything Sega almost I would want to do, because Sega seems to not like doing physicals right now. Yakuza 5 is a great example. Like, it's the only game in the series that's not going to have a physical. Like, we tried, they actually listened to us, but they were like, unfortunately, we can't. So, but 6 and 0 that are going to come out in America now are actually going to have physicals. So, I feel like that. And then another big one I still want is Axiom Verge. I can't tell you how much I harass those guys. and I would also love to do, I don't know, like, something with Double Fine. I would love to do, like, Psychonauts. Like, now that they did the PS2 on PS4 Classic.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of other ones, too. I mean, this list could go on for a long time, but I'd say a lot of the Sega stuff is kind of, like, priority for me. And, there's a lot of Square stuff, too, recently. Like, I Am Setsuna. That's one that people know I've been trying to fight for, but it's, like, it's still really hard to get a hold of them. So pretty soon we're going to announce our first Japanese partnership game that's going to come out in September, and we feel like as long as we do really well by them, in Japan, the game industry is really built around trust. So if we want to get anywhere with these other companies, we need a Japanese company to say, hey, these guys can be trusted, they're going to pay you on time, they're going to do exactly what they say, and they're good to work with. So we're hoping that everything goes smooth with them, and maybe like the doors will open for other ones.
Awesome. I'd have to say, if you guys could put out a physical version of any game, it's gonna be kind of obscure, but I would love a physical version of the PlayStation 2's Punisher for my Vita. Holy crap! Like, I would play the freak out of that. Like, probably the farthest shot in the dark there is, an Activision third party PS2 game, Xbox OG game, ported physically to the Vita. But my God, that would be like, I've got a shelf, and at the top of my shelf is just like this, like a large handful of Punisher action figures. I've got ridiculous amount of comics, movies, Blu-rays, everything. And man, to have like a dream would be a Punisher Vita game, to just sit up there in the middle of all those action figures. That'd melt my heart. Oh my God, that would be. I don't know if there's a price that you could. I don't know if there's. I could say that's too much. That's probably one of those games that I'd put some freaking money on. What about you, T-Bird?
Oh goodness! I wouldn't mind having a Vita version of Dark Cloud 2.
Yes,
I definitely play that on the go more than I would on a console, just because it's like a 200-hour RPG. I think it was so.
You're a big Dark Cloud fan, too, so that's...
Yeah.
I can almost guess that one.
Yeah, that's a good request. I mean, technically, we could put that on PS4. The Vita one's the only one that we'd have to... They would have to make a Vita build for it, but... We could do a PS4 one, and theoretically, there could be a Vita one, but... Again, that stuff's really hard to work with. Like, I was... we met with Sony at E3, and I really wanted Rogue Galaxy, and Sony was basically just like, no. Like, you can't. Like, why would we go through you guys to do that in the first place? And I was like... Yeah, I know, but I'm still dreaming, so...
Hey, you know what?
One day.
You never know till you ask.
Yeah.
All right, so another one of our community peeps wrote in, and they said, games like XCOM, Sly Cooper, Thieves in Time, Rayman Origins, and Legends, Telltale Games, Lego, etc., prove that the Vita can handle PS3 games if ported. What game do you think the Vita can handle from the PS3 that you'd like to see ported, and then... get a physical release? And Jared, a.k.a. Stink Palm, he said South Park Stick of Truth is what he would have in mind. So, again, this is kind of in the fantasy realm of if we could have it ported and then buy it from you guys. Well, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's, like, I'm trying to think of my PS3 games, like, what I would like to see. I know, like, I would love to have been able to play, like, the Kingdom Hearts remastered games on Vita.
Oh, you're tugging, yes, Tanner's heartstrings. Yes.
Yeah. So if they could have done those on Vita, I mean, I don't see why not. They had, like, there's no reason it couldn't have. And then,
No.
I would love to, like, play the Yakuza games on the go. Like, the only ones that were portable are, like, stuck in Japan, but if they could do some of the main series for Vita, that would be fun, because those games, I can literally just spend hours just walking around Japan. In fact, I played those games so much, and they take place in Shinjuku in Tokyo, that when I went to Tokyo in March with my wife, I knew where everything was, because it's an actual layout of that area in Tokyo.
That is awesome.
Yeah, there's another game too called Akiba's Trip. It's basically a game where like you're in Akihabara and you like strip people to see if they're vampires. But regardless of the crazy plot, the game was the game was modeled after Akihabara, like the actual one. And I learned how to like where everything was too. Like I found the Gundam Cafe because of that game. So but yeah, I'd love to see some Kingdom Hearts games on the Vita. You know, they did all those. I kind of got mad when they switched a lot of them over to 3DS and like DS because at the time I had sold mine, so I was kind of like a little salty that I couldn't play them on a Sony platform considering that's where they started.
Don't forget about that one game on the phone.
Oh yeah, that one too. Nokia. Yeah, like that was just like that didn't make any sense to me. Like, come on, guys, keep it console or like keep it on the same like family.
Yeah.
That's another series that I just completely missed. I remember PS2, was it Kingdom Hearts 2? Or did Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 come out on PS2?
1 and 2.
Okay, 1 and 2. So it was Kingdom Hearts 1. One of my buddies got it. He was like, dude, you have got to play this. And this is, last episode I talked about how I went through a little phase where I learned to mod console. So I was like modding a bunch of consoles, playing a bunch of random stuff. And so this is one of those. That was one of those games that I never played just because I was preoccupied with other stuff at the time, and that entire franchise has passed me by. And so, the T-Bird and I are actually planning on sitting down and doing some Let's Plays of the Kingdom Hearts series because I am completely clueless about them.
I mean, I've played most of them, and there's parts of the story where I'm just like, what? Like,
yeah.
You almost need the Wikipedia for it, because like some of the stuff in that they just don't explain, or it gets explained in one of the side games that wasn't on a main console, and it doesn't make any sense. But the games themselves, like I remember when they came out, I was just kind of like, Final Fantasy and Disney, what is this? And then I played it and I was like, wow, this is a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be. And like the music in it was amazing, the art.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, like I can listen to that. That's one of the soundtracks actually I play at work when I'm just like trying to get my work done. I'll just listen to that. And like same with Final Fantasy soundtracks, like it just they're very like similar, and that's what I love about it.
That's what's up. So someone else wrote in and says, I only recently got into collecting limited run Vita games. If I really want them, I have to overpay for the ones I miss on eBay. Now I referenced that earlier in the show. Is there any chance of reprints of past releases, and what would be involved with getting the rights to publish past limited run releases?
So the first thing I'd say to this this person with their question is, we're gonna have a sale on Black Friday. It's gonna be like any extras we had of our past releases, we'll be selling them then. So there might not be a lot of some games like Oddworld on Vita. We definitely don't have very many of, so that will be kind of like a free for all. And we may even throw in some Breach and Clears into random people like mystery bags. We haven't really decided. But in terms of reprints, we've been very, very stern on that. Like, we were never, ever going to do a reprint. We have to stay true to our brand. So we got asked this question actually earlier today in an interview, like, why that is and why we're so against it, and, like, we should want to have open orders to make more money. It's a very fine balance. So if these games weren't limited, people not, like, Breach and Clear, for example, like Josh was saying this earlier, it's our own game. Like, we can kind of crap on it if we want. It's a good game, we're proud of it, but it didn't get very good reviews. So on Vita, it made like $10,000 in 4 months. And we did a limited run of it, we did 1,500 copies, and they sold out in 108 minutes. And we made like $30,000 or $40,000 on it, like we tripled it. So, and the reason that is because we said it was only going to be 1,500 copies. Like, honestly, a lot of people probably wouldn't have bought that game. Like, if it had been on store shelves or an open edition, a lot of people would have been like, why do I want this game? Like, I can get it at any time, it's not a big deal. So that's another reason why we won't do reprints. It devalues our own games. But the thing about that is, once our games are sold out, the contracts we have with developers actually revert back, like all the rights. And they're able to do a reprint if they want. So the idea is that we've made them some money. If they really wanted to do another print and if demand's there, they can go with someone else or do it themselves. So it's just the only thing exclusive to us is the artwork on the case is just exclusive to us. So that way, ours still say it's like our brand.
Awesome, awesome.
Heck yeah.
So yeah, it's crazy. You mentioned the Black Friday sale, and when I was reading these questions, I'm like, you know what? I wonder if they would do something like that because I've seen other We'll use Kind of Funny as an example. You know what I'm saying? They have their, you know what I'm saying? There's a one time only they do this t-shirt. It's for every sale Tuesday. For this, you know what I'm saying? That one Tuesday of the month or whatever, and for 24 hours. And then when it's gone, it's gone. And then I want to say for Black Friday, they're like, all right, every single shirt that we sold is available for Black Friday. And then that's it. And I was like, you know, that is a really good strategy to keep your stuff truly limited, but yet give that one, you know, quick second chance for all the people. Like, I'll use myself as an example. when we originally talked about getting together, you had two games coming out. And I was like, I saw where you guys said, all right, they're going on sale in 30 minutes on Twitter. Now I'm working at the shop and I'm on running one of our CNC lasers. And I'm like, oh, I'll just check it in a minute. I'll check it in a minute. And then when I click back over, you know what I'm saying, got back in my office and booted everything up, it was like, oh my God, everything's sold out. We think someone hacked our store. I'm like, well, I didn't really stand a chance on this one. So, you know, but I really, really respect, you know what I'm saying, you got y'all's philosophy on keeping things truly limited, because I 100% agree. They're limited. Oh, wait, we're going to make some more, but they're still limited. You know, you do, it would devalue what you're doing. And it really does. You know what I'm saying? Make what you're doing that much more exciting and that much more special. So
there's a lot of games we're putting out that are like very niche, and like honestly, would they appeal to people on a broader spectrum? Like if we were selling these on Amazon, how many would they really sell? They might sell like 400 copies, but and that wouldn't really help a developer. So by doing this, we're actually making sure we sell out of everything, and that's another reason too we want to do this is all the money that we make goes into the next run. So if we're sitting on back stock, we can't necessarily afford to pay for the next game.
Right.
And we don't want to keep doing small runs. Like, a lot of people are saying, like, Limit Run Games is going to continue to just do small runs. Obviously, as our fan base grows, we're going to grow the sizes. Like, Shadow Complex, there was 7,500 copies printed. 6,900 are available to the public. Like, Epic kept 600 to give to their employees, and so did Chair. Like, they get to split that up because they have a lot of employees, and that's just kind of like, that was our contract with them. They want those to distribute to employees, and the rest are available to the public. And that itself is a very big run for us. Like Solner was less than 3,000. So we've like more than doubled the size of a run now. And obviously we're gonna keep doing that. We're gonna keep trying to find that balance between how many customers we have and how big the runs need to be. And obviously as a business we need to grow. So the more we sell, the more we can grow. I mean, the bigger runs we can keep affording. So that's the idea. Like we don't want to keep doing small ones, like everybody keeps saying that, and we're like, why would we do that? Like, why would we hurt ourselves? Like, I don't want people to fight over this that hard. I want to make everyone happy. I want these games to be out there.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Like I said, I really dig what you guys are doing. So, topic number three. Now, we're going to take the focus off of Limited Run for a little bit, and let's have you weigh in on some of the other more current stuff that's going on. With more information leaking about the NX being portable, do we think the other two companies, Sony and Microsoft, good Lord, are they going to launch their own handhelds? I mean, you guys think they're going to respond? You know, there's a lot of rumors swirling around with this Vita Trinity. You know what I'm saying? These on NeoGAF, they got that thread on the, I guess, the patent. You know what I'm saying? I saw the little thing on there I just kind of skimmed through it. I spent more time reading people's comments on the thread than I did actually reading what it was. But it looks like, you know what I'm saying, Sony's got some new wireless chip. There's a new maybe prototype that they're scooting around. But there's rumors that there could be another Vita handheld. Microsoft, far as I know, years and years and years ago, kind of kicked around the idea of putting out a handheld. I want to say this is before the Vita's time, but they got their Surface tablets, but they've never really put out like a legit dedicated handheld. If the NX comes out and it's truly portable / you know what I'm saying, home console, do you think the other two companies will respond?
I guess I'll go first. For Microsoft, I'm just going to go ahead and say no. I feel like they're definitely not going to, because their whole thing with the Xbox One is it's an all-in-one entertainment console. It does everything they like you need. They're gonna, if they do in handheld, they're kind of like saying like it's not everything you need. And I can't really see them trying to go after that market, especially since they're still playing catch-up right now with Sony and trying to make people happy. I can't see them trying to, like granted they have the money, but I can't see them wanting to expose themselves on another market. Sony, I mean, I was on that NeoGAF thread too. I've seen people are dreaming really high. It makes sense for a new Vita though, like if they were going to do it, because the Vita right now is not very, it's not functioning at all with the PS4. Like, you basically still have to own a PS3 to use your Vita. Like, if you want to back up your games, you have to back it up on the computer, or you have to back it up on your PS3. Nope. The PS4 and the Vita, like, just don't communicate, like, other than doing the whole remote play. Yeah, remote play, that's about it. So I feel like Sony could definitely want to do that. For me, though, it's like a 50% chance. Like, I'm not going to hold my breath on it just because of how much the Vita kind of struggled here, but I could see them doing it. Unfortunately, if they did, I could see it being, like, basically like the PSP Go, and it's all digital. So I feel like they might eliminate that, because when we started Limited Run, we were originally going to do... Sorry to bring the focus back to me.
No, you're good. This is total conversation.
Yeah, we were originally going to do more PS4 games because it was actually cheaper to produce, and Vita was actually almost like double what it was for to print out these cartridges. But Vita fans actually spoke up, and like it turns out like our Vita launches typically sell out faster than our PS4 now. So Vita people are hungry, but Sony as a company, I don't think feels like the Vita is still like a viable option for them. And like I said, it costs more to produce cartridges for the Vita, so I could see them not going physical on the next one if they do it. But again, I'm like 50% on that. Like, I could see them doing it because they like the PS4 needs it. I guess like it needs to be able to communicate with the handheld, but at the same time, like, they're doing so well with PS4, they may not like even need to do this. Like, they're making money. Like, I can't see them wanting to like risk this again.
What about you, D-Bird?
Well, like you said, Microsoft's definitely not going to do it. Xbox One's all in one. You know, you shouldn't need a handheld if it's technically the one console you're going to need. But as far as Sony goes, I think they will do it. And if they do, I'm going to definitely buy it. And I kind of hope it isn't just all digital. I wouldn't mind having a couple like physical games. You know, like, whenever I had a Vita, I had a couple physical games, but the only one I really stuck with me was Gravity Rush. And like, I wish I could get more games like that on my Vita. But
I am such a Vita fangirl that, like, when I saw that threat, first I saw Colin Moriarty post it. He posted something. but it said, this could be nothing, but let's pray to Shuhei for clarity. And I clicked on the thread and immediately saw the little schematic for it, the little list of, you know, all the bull crap for it. And I started like just kind of looking through the thread of people's comments, and I'm like my heart was racing, like it was pounding out of my chest. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Cause I play my Vita so freaking much. Like, if it wasn't for my Vita, I would literally get almost zero game time. You know, like, since my wife's been in doing her master's program, I've gotten more actual console face-to-face time. But, man, there was a point in time where, like, I literally had to remote play everything just to function. But I've got the OG, the OLED screen Vita. I've got the Slim Vita. And, man, I'm telling you, I've got two PSPs on my shelf over there. I had the Slim PSPs. The only PSP I never owned was the Go. And that was because it was all digital, and I was completely against digital at the time. Like, I was like, yeah, this will never sell.
The funny part about that is, though, like, I own so many UMDs, and they're just so, like, bulky, and I'm like, whoa, this was such a terrible idea, like, UMD-wise.
Man, when it came out, though, it was the freaking jam. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. And I was like, I told a story a few weeks ago on the show. I bought the big bundle with the 1 gig memory card, and it came with the music videos. And
oh, I had that one.
I was like, same here. Dude, yeah, I thought I was so freaking cool with that
thing. I used to use my my PSP as like an MP3 player too, because back then they were still like MP3 players were just coming out. So
yep.
I used to walk around with this giant thing in my pocket, but I mean, I was walking around with CD players before, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Dude, I remember it was a group of us, me and my buddies. We Black Friday camped out of Best Buy, and we all bought Vitas. You know, we bought the Vita bundles. And then I remember just like there was a point in time where we all walked around with our Vitas in our pockets. I mean, excuse me, Vitas. Listen to me. God almighty. I'm so Vita brainwashed. Our PSPs in our pockets. And we like, just like you, we use it as an MP3 player, and we would just like let it play music, you know? And so I remember going downtown Columbia, and my wife was in college at the time, and there was like an ice cream shop, like a marble slab type thing or whatever. And I go in there and I see a couple other dudes hanging out, listening to music with their Vitas. To say, oh, I mean, God, my, I did it again. Their PSPs. I'm like, man, we could start a gang. This is like a thing. And we could just all walk around like in the old days, and had the huge boom boxes on their shoulder. We just all just walk around with our PSPs hanging out of our pocket with music playing. So I loved it. I loved the PSP. I was crazy about it. And then I figured I could homebrew it, you know, or mod it so I could get those homebrews and stuff like that. And I was like, I had all kinds of freaking crazy emulators on there. So huge fan. Like I said, the fangirl in me wants another Vita. I would literally pay the price of a, you know what I'm saying, like a big console for it. Something with, you know what I'm saying, another set of triggers on there. It's the whole back touch thing drives me crazy. Like,
I think that's the thing that drove me away.
Back touch drives me nuts.
Because like I could never figure it out. I always thought those little back like plates you put your fingers on were it. No. I didn't know it was the middle of the thing.
Yeah. Well, see, the way I figured it out was I was playing a game. I think it was what was I playing? I was remote playing Outlast. And I comfortably just rest my hands back there, you know? I have big hands, and so they got to go somewhere. And I remember, like, it kept lighting up on the screen, you know what I'm saying, that I was doing that. I'm like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. This isn't working. So my first remote play experience was real jacked, and I was like, this didn't work. You know, I was like, what's going on? And then, you know, I played through, like, was it Golden Abyss? Used back touch. A couple other ones used back touch. And I had already used it in Vita games, but didn't realize like you, I thought that the pads on the back were. So I was like, I'm not touching it. Why is this thing freaking out? Why is this remote play thing not working? And then finally, I realized that I've been doing it wrong this whole time and just literally got lucky.
Something else I wanted to mention that I really enjoyed about like the PlayStation Portable and the Vita was the. I always liked Nintendo stuff, but Nintendo stuff always felt more like family friendly. And to me, like, the PSP and the Vita felt very, like, more adult. Like, they felt they felt like a premium gaming console, like, handheld. Like, I just felt like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, like bougie, you know? I felt like, man, I'm holding, like, a really nice, like, this looks like a nice, like, piece of equipment right here. Like, it's shiny, it's black, it's, you know, like the, like, I really like the DS and stuff, things. But I just, because I own all of it, I have to, but...
Yeah,
I just really enjoyed like the look. It was like sexy looking.
Yes, I agree. When I got my first PSP, I was like, man, this thing right here, this is the future. And it had great graphics, it had really cool games, and I was like, I can't believe we're finally getting to a point where we can have console quality games. And then of course when the Vita came out, that was really what like sold me, because at the time when the Vita first came out, we were still playing and touring and doing a lot of stuff with our band. And what we used to do when at our peak or at our height of playing, when we actually got access to green rooms, or we sat on our tour bus that we did not own, that our sound guy owned, but he'd take us around in it because his daughter was in our band. We would sit there and we'd bring consoles with us. Like I had like a monitor and a Xbox 360 that I would throw in my suitcase. And when we'd go places, I'd always take it, you know, I'd have it in my suitcase with my clothes wrapped around it. But, like, there were so many times where you didn't have anywhere to hook that up. So the vocalist and I, we had our PSPs, and we would play the freak out of some games. And when the Vita came out, we were still kind of, that was kind of the tail end of us playing music and doing things. And I remember myself and one of the guys from Take Heart, you know what I'm saying, we got Vitas. And seeing him at the shows, man, just like he was videotaping one of our performances on a Vita. Easy. He was And so I don't know, man, I just like I loved it. I was like, man, this thing right here. So the idea of getting like feeling that again, like that. Some people have like crazy nostalgia and like crazy good feels when it comes to like old Nintendo games, old Nintendo consoles, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. Like I remember like that first new PSP, the PSP was 2000, the slim one. Even like I said, I didn't get the Go, but when I got the Vita, it was like that feeling of like, wow, we're getting to the point where we're going to have like console quality experiences on the go. And I like, dude, I love it. I would love to do that again. And so, and I said this in the shop, and then we'll move on. If they announce another Vita 2 or Vita Trinity, whatever it's going to be called, you know what I'm saying? I would legitimately go pre-order one for me, my son, and my daughter. Like, and because there's days where we're sitting around the house on Saturdays watching a show. We got a little 18-month-old running around. So he's watching shows and terrorizing the living room. And we're like, my daughter's on her DS. My son's on his Vita. I'm on my Vita. And we're all just chilling, you know what I'm saying? Just enjoying the day. And I could get down on that. So, topic number 4. Back on that Nintendo and chill. Now, we didn't talk about this too much. But with the NES Mini, or the Micro, or Classic, or whatever you want to call it, coming out, it's got 30 games, you know what I'm saying? What other, you know what I'm saying, micro consoles would we like to see? If you guys could pick any system in the entire, you know what I'm saying, history of gaming to have a, you know what I'm saying, little mini console popped out with, you know what I'm saying, your favorite games on it, what would it be?
For me, it'd be the Dreamcast.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if Josh was here, he'd say the same thing. That was kind of like our bonding system when we were friends. And game-wise, I would probably like, you know, it's got to have Creed's Taxi, it's got to have Shenmue, it's got to have Phantasy Star Online, some Soul Calibur, stuff like that. It's got to have all the great Skies of Arcadia, Choo Choo Rocket, even. So, I mean, I could go on, like, it would need more than 30 games, but I'm sure I could limit it to 30 if I had to.
I remember, I want to say my first Phantasy Star I ever played was Phantasy Star Online on the Dreamcast. And then Soul Reaver, Soul Reaver Legacy of Kain, or was it just Soul Reaver that came on Dreamcast? Oh my gosh, the Soul Reaver games were so good. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 was a Dreamcast jam that I had. Seaman. With the little UMD screen so you could see your Seaman growing. did you ever heard of Seaman?
No.
You never heard of Seaman?
It was pretty funny.
Okay, so Seaman is a game where you have like this little tadpole like creature and it grows and you have to like feed it and take care of it, entertain it. And I never got anywhere with it, but I remember we picked it up at the flea market for like $10, and it was like my dad was like, "Seaman, get it, Seaman." And so, like, see where I get my sense of humor from, my dad. And anyways, we come home, we pop in the Dreamcast, and here we are playing Seaman. And I remember we had the little video screen UMD, and it's like it looked, from what I remember, it's been years and years since I played it. It looked like it took place in like an aquarium or something, or some kind of like pond, and you have like just this little screen of this little tadpole, I think, with a man's face on it, and you had to like feed him and grow it, and you know what I'm saying? I guess eventually it became a real man, not just a sea man, but I never got that far. It was like one of those things where I didn't understand how the game worked, played it for a very small amount of time, and have just always made jokes about how I owned Seaman on Dreamcast.
Good Lord.
Yes. God, Dreamcast was a freaking... That's one of those classic consoles that I love. God, there were so many good games on it. And I spent a crazy amount of time in that Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Like, yeah, I put in, like, I think 1,500 hours in Phantasy Star Online alone.
Whew, that's crazy.
Yeah, I maxed out the counter, so I can't... I don't know. It stopped at 999, and after that, wow. I had no idea. And then I did the same thing for GameCube.
If I had to choose my classic console with 30 games, it would be the GameCube. I don't know if I could pick 30 games, but I would love to have, you know what I'm saying, could you imagine a smaller GameCube in the shape of a cube, pocket-sized cube? Man, we talked last week on episode 41 about our favorite consoles, favorite Nintendo consoles, and my favorite Nintendo console and possibly one of my favorite consoles of all time, if not my favorite console, is the GameCube. I love it. And I'm a huge Resident Evil fan, and that was like Resident Evil City for a few years there.
Yeah, I gotta admit, when I bought my GameCube originally, I didn't have that many games, and because I bought it for Phantasy Star Online, but I also bought it for Resident Evil, because I remember when the first remake came out. That was like,
God, that was so good.
It still holds up to this day. It looks great.
Oh, yes.
The tank controls might be a little bit dated, but for people like you and me that are, like, we're already used to it, it feels at home for us.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I remember that, and then, like, especially Resident Evil 4, when that came out, like, that to me was the definitive version, because, like, the secret costumes you got actually showed up in the FMV sections, where I was on PlayStation 2, it was all pre-rendered, so, like, your costume didn't show up. Like, Leon was always wearing what he was supposed to wear.
Yeah.
But on GameCube, if you had the RPD outfit on, it showed up in the scenes. Oh, so good.
Yeah, I love that game. I talked in length about that last week, but man, GameCube, Resident Evil 4, oh my gosh. And then when they ported Resident Evil 2 and 3, I couldn't find it in any stores anywhere. You know, like, it was like, when they released, I couldn't find them. So, like, no joke, I got on my dad's girlfriend at the time, her, like, janky old desktop with the slowest, like, 56K modem internet you ever heard in your life. Got on Capcom Store. I want to say this was my first... It was definitely the first video game I ever bought online. It might have even been one of my first online purchases, period. But I bought Resident Evil 2 and 3 on the GameCube, and I still have them sitting on my shelf right now. And I remember losing large chunks of my life playing those games over and over and over. And then Code Veronica. Holy crap. That's good stuff right there. Then Resident Evil 0. I remember my wife bought me Resident Evil 0. She was my girlfriend at the time. God almighty. Didn't sleep during those years. I lost a lot of sleep. What about you, T-Bird?
I got a good PS1.
It's a good answer.
Yeah, because I wish it was an easier place for me to play those old 3D platformers I used to play, like Croc, Crash, Spyro. All the games I've grown up with.
What about Blasto? Did you play that?
Yes.
Yeah, I got a copy of that physical right now. It's, I don't know why I really needed that.
I don't mind. I might actually have to go buy that one now too.
I actually was going through. I gave my kids a PS3 not too long ago. The Xbox One was giving us Hades, and I constantly complain about it on the show how I've had two Xbox Ones, and both of them have just been like glitchy, buggy, you know what I'm saying, ridiculous hot messes. And so I told my kids I was so fed up with the thing not working and desyncing the controllers and, you know, having all these issues. I said, here's a PS3. I have already bought tons of games they wanted. I downloaded everything they liked, from their Lego games to All-Stars, Battle Royale, Injustice, of course, Minecraft. And so I said, here, this is a proven system. It works. All your games are on it. I've got a boatload of controllers. You know what I'm saying? I don't want your mom to have to call me at work anymore because your game system's not working. So I was going through the library the other night because my son asked me, we were doing our bedtime routine, and he said, Daddy, he said, it was the craziest thing ever. He said, I really would like for you to buy my games digitally. I said, why? And he said, because I don't want to have to ask mama to change the disc, because they're not allowed to touch the disc in the house. That's daddy's rule, so that they don't get messed up, because kids will destroy everything. I feel like my kids are very, very mature for their age and very careful, but I've seen some of their DVDs and I'm like, nerp. But anyway, so he told me the other night, this was just a few nights ago, he said, I would like for you to buy my games digital so that I don't have to ask mama to change the disc anymore. And he said, he said, thank you for giving me the PlayStation, because, you know, I have more problems with it. But anyways, I was going through my list of stuff. After he said that, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go through everything I've ever bought digitally, everything I've ever got. I got down to the bottom of my list. Now, on the PlayStation 3, it says I've got like 800 and something downloads, and that's not counting the PS4 stuff. So I get down to the bottom of the list, and I'm like, I was like, oh, I forgot I bought all this stuff. I had Crash. I want to say I had all three, Crash 1, 2, and Kart Racing.
No, it was Warped, and then it was Kart Racing.
I got Warped Kart Racing. I've got Spyro. I've got Gex. I've got all these, like...
Oh, that's another one.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, dude. It, like, took me back. I remember playing these games for the first time back on the PS1. And I was like, man, I forgot all about those. So I'm sitting here just clicking and downloading, and of course the store's kicking me out. And freaking out. And it's like, I'm like, man, I got to get these things downloaded on here so that my kids can play them, because I forgot that era of 3D platforming. Because at this point in my life, I'm like, I'm not a 3D platformer fan. I've not really ever been a 3D platformer fan. And then I saw games that I completely forgot about. I was like, oh, I remember. I really like that.
The only bad thing about that, I wish you could play all those on the Vita. You can play the Gexes on the Vita. You can't play Crashes. You can't play the Spyros. I don't think you can play Blasto either. Or if it's even on the store.
Okay. Now, I know some of those old games you have to transfer onto the Vita from the PS3. You can't just download them to the Vita. Oh, kind
of like Battlefront 2?
Yeah, like Battlefront 2. You can't download Battlefront 2 on your Vita through the store. But if you download it on your PS3 and then transfer it over to your Vita in the little bubble, you know what I'm saying, you can play it. So some of those games might work that same way. I know, I want to say the Crash games, you can definitely play on the PSP because they're literally on my son's PSP over there. So,
fair enough.
Well, that's it for the topics this week. Doug, I want to thank you so much for wasting your time with us, you know what I'm saying, coming on the show and telling us, what all you do and what you guys are about. I know we got a handful of listeners that are going to be really, really excited that this show finally happened. I got a couple guys who are huge fans of yours. If anybody is interested in Limited Run Games, where can they find you?
If they're interested in buying something from us, they can go to our website, limitedrungames.com, and they can sign up for our mailing list. They can also follow us on Twitter at Limited Run Games, facebook.com/limitedrungames, Instagram, Limited Run Games. Don't have a Tumblr, probably never will, because that doesn't make any sense to me. But you pretty much find us anywhere, just type in Limited Run Games. But yeah.
Awesome. You guys got anything big coming up that you want to plug real fast before we... I know you got Shadow Complex coming out. I know you got some things you can't talk about, but is there anything else coming up that you wanted to let everybody know about?
Just to let everybody know that September is a big month. It's a big month in gaming in general. Like, I'm personally going to go. It's going to hurt me a bit on my wallet just because of how many collector's editions are coming out and how many games are coming out. There's a rumor that Final Fantasy might get delayed. I kind of hope it doesn't, just because I've been waiting like my whole life to play it already. But that whole month is going to be crazy for games, but it's also a big month for us. We could have anywhere from 6 to 7 releases.
Oh, wow. That's really good.
But that's PS4 and Vita, so like one game, it's really like 4 games, but it's on both.
Gotcha.
That's still like, so a lot of people double dip, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I hate to break your heart, but right before we got started this podcast, I saw a Wario64 post that Final Fantasy is getting delayed till November 30th.
Damn it, Wario. You're always doing that to me. you know, it sucks, too. Like, I was doing a lot better, you know, just, like, not, like, freaking out about games. And then, like, we were at the office, and Josh was like, hey, you should follow Wario, even though he just leaked everything at E3 to me. And I was like, oh, okay. And then next thing I know, I'm like, wow, this is hurting my wallet. Like, I got to stop following this guy.
Yeah, dude. Between him and CAG, the Cheap A Gamers, I'm just like, God, dog, they will... I try to limit the amount of time I spend on social media, and I'll click over, and then I'll say, while you were away, and those guys are just like blowing it up. I'm like, holy crap, all these games are on sale. I need to go check this. And then one day they posted the Redbox sale. So Redbox has all these games like super discounted. So T-Bird and I are freaking hit the road right after work, and we're like Redbox hopping, trying to find copies of
it's Uncharted Collection, Halo 5.
Halo, all that stuff. So... I love that stuff. I love following these guys because they always let me know about the good sales. What about you, T-Bird? Where can they find you and what you got going on?
I have nothing to plug, but you can follow me on Twitter at T_Bird803, and you can find me on Xbox Live, PSN, Twitch at T-Bird803.
I just want you to know that since we have a guest on the show, I refrain from making very mature jokes about what would you do and don't have to plug. So I just want to throw that out there. I want to let you know I was thinking about it, but I want to let you know that I refrained because we have company. Next time, you won't be so lucky.
And then you just fart.
I am at Resident Daryl across all platforms, PSN, Xbone. You'll never find me there. Twitter, Twitch, all that good stuff. The T-Bird and I have some YouTube videos coming up. We're going to play through the Kingdom Hearts series, maybe not to completion, but we're going to do some dabbling.
Oh, no, no. If you're doing it, you're going to play at least the first one in completion.
Donnie and I, Donnie from Trophy Horse, and I, we're going to be doing some special podcasting on the Resident Evil series. We're going to start from the beginning and work our way through. So we got some cool stuff coming up. I'm not sure where that podcast will land. If that'll be a Trophy Horse podcast, if that'll be a PG Spoilers podcast, or if that'll be a Remember the Loot podcast. But I will
whatever.
Talk. We were just talking about Resident Evil the entire time. As for housekeeping, we did not announce the loot ski of the week. I want to give a shout out to Cody Kitchens. All right, this dude has been hooking me up. Dude works for GameStop. I am a steelbook collector, and sometimes I will, for the sake of the wallet, buy a game and not the steelbook version, not the collector's edition. And it pains me, you know. It pains me that my wife and I have a strict budget, and I have to play by the rules from time to time. But so I got somebody out there who's looking out for me that when these games come in on trade-in, he's like, hey, man, I got a stack of steelbooks over here if you're interested in anything. So I do get my second chance with the steelbooks. And my wife and I have plans. I don't know when this is going to happen. And it might be this wall behind us right here with the green screen where we're going to get that magnetic paint. I saw something on Twitter where you know somebody had painted like one of their walls, and they lined up all their steelbooks on it with that magnetic paint. It looked amazing. Now I've got all these shelves with steelbooks everywhere. I'm close to, I think I got 30-something steelbooks. Yeah, I got a lot. And that's not counting the Blu-rays and the, you know what I'm saying, DVD steelbooks. That's just strictly games. And I want to say 95% of them, I actually own the game with it. There's a couple of them I've accumulated that didn't come with the game. But so my special project is to paint the walls with magnetism. But shout out to Cody for hooking me up, man. He looks out for me. He got me a really sweet Valkyria Chronicles steelbook. And I am, it's nice. I love the art on it. Holy crap.
When are you going to get that Dark Souls 3 one?
You know what? I ain't even bought Dark Souls 3 yet. So, hey, while we're at it, Doug, next time you guys have a sweet limited run and you want to throw in some limited steelbook runs, holler at your boy.
Yeah, we actually did get a hold of steelbook. There's a game we're probably going to do a portion steelbook, so.
Like, oh, my God. See, yeah. Now you got something. You got me. I'm hooked.
I got you.
Got him. All right, and then you know, I just want to kind of put this plug out there. We laid off of it for a little while. We are still doing we're anxious looking to get more reviews on iTunes. We are still giving out game codes for every 25 we get. So you guys, do not forget about us on iTunes. I know everyone's out there on their Podbean, Tricky Mix favorite podcast app, Podbean. I know that's where you're getting us, but if you could just take a minute. Good God, that is awful, dude. You are a terrible person for that. Just take a minute to leave a review and tell Tanner he's a horrible person. We appreciate it. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Doug and Limited Run Games for coming on the show. And we want you to know you are welcome on Rumor Loot anytime you want. You just holler at us and we'll put you on. That being said, episode 42 is done.
Night.
Please hang up and try again.